Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Griffin Coyner, 14 years of volunteer and career experience, a tailboard firefighter on Engine 71 and tillerman on Ladder 71 for the Pleasant Grove Fire Department in Utah, owner and product creator for the Stash Salt. Griffin's journey into the fire service has a lot of meaning to him, and when you hear the quote he uses to remember his why, it makes perfect sense. His experience from going to a small, then to a very large, and back to a small department is one all should hear. When it comes to whether you're a big city firefighter or not, the experiences, call volume, and amount of jobs won't be the same, but it's truly about who you work and surround yourself with that will make the job truly worth it. With that, I present Mr. Griffin Coyner.
What's going on, guys? My name is Griffin Coyner. I'm currently a firefighter for Pleasant Grove, Utah. I started in the fire service about 2010. When people say, like, how'd you get into the fire service or why'd you get in the fire service, I kind of say my answer is like that typical interview style question answer. When I was growing up, my dad was all PD. Everything was police. All his friends were police. I grew up, he wasn't a cop, but it was like, that's what he wanted to do. So like, he was like tactical, if that makes sense. But all growing up, all we ever did was hang around with cop stuff and do all that. And my parents were in a super bad car wreck when I was a young kid. He ended up coding three times. They got flown out, cut out of the car, the whole deal. But I remember he said while he was hanging upside down in his car, and like I said, all he knew was PD stuff. He had no reference for fire, anything. He was hanging upside down in his car and he heard the rescue tools start. And he said at that moment, he knew there was hope. And so for me, that always stuck out my whole life, my whole childhood. I was like, I always wanted to be that hope for someone when they're stuck, when there's no other way out. I wanted to be that hope. So that kind of just stuck with me. And it's still something that is in my mind every single day, through the mundane, through the boring calls, through the BS routine, right? Like for them, it's a big deal. And whether they stub their toe or trapped in a fire or whatever it is, it's a big deal to them. So I've accepted that it's a big deal to me too. And I want to be that hope to make it better for them.
Okay. Yeah, that's a very profound opening, man. Like on how you got there. I mean, it's great. I always like hearing how different people gravitate towards the fire service, and that is one hell of a story, man. So I gotta say, that's props to you on that. And I love how when your dad said when he heard the tools crank up, that was his hope, how you correlate that to the mundane calls. And yes, we all run them, man. Our frequent flyers who fall constantly multiple times a day, and you're just like, oh, but to them it's the emergency, so we got to treat it as such. So I love the message.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure we'll get into stuff later, but it absolutely drives me nuts when people say it's not my emergency. Like, it is your freaking emergency because you signed up and said, hey, when that bell goes off, that one's mine and I'll go take it. So, like, whether it's a stub toe or badass structure fire, like, it is your freaking emergency, so act like it. Even if it's boring or BS or, like, whatever, it is your freaking emergency, so go handle it.
Yes, definitely. So for those that don't know, you are a firefighter tailboard for Pleasant Grove Fire Department, and including myself, can you tell us about the size of your department, the area where it's located, how many calls you guys run, things of that nature?
Yeah, so I have a few different places I've worked. I'm still a relatively new guy here in Utah. I worked in Texas for about 10 years, but now Pleasant Grove, I'm back to a one station, basically engine ladder company, ambulance, about seven people a day. We run about 2,000 a year. So, I mean, we're not super busy, but this little pocket of Utah County, we're located like Pleasant Grove, American Fork, Orem, like just north of Provo area. So, I mean, we have mountains, we have interstate, we have commercial, we have a bunch of swift water stuff. I mean, we've got a little bit of everything right here in this little pocket of chaos. So, It's super fun. It's not the craziest, busiest. Having been where I've worked for one of the biggest departments in the country, it's nice to come here. And I don't want to say like get back to the roots of the fire service, but kind of I'd rather have less calls with the right people for the right reasons, if that makes sense. So, yeah, one station, single company house, engine tiller, ambulance, and it's freaking awesome.
Okay. I got to ask, man, because I love that you brought it up, and I just want other people to hear your perspective. So you were in Texas for 10 years for a major department. What made you make that switch from big city or big size to single station? Because a lot of firemen out there, or you know, at least a majority somewhere in their head, feel like just because their department is small, like, you know, like they're not it. It's not the same feeling. Like, you know, I know a good number of guys who have left smaller departments to go to big departments. And you know, it's that, to me, it's that mindset of what you want, but I want you to explain, is that really the case all the time? You know what I mean? Because I love how you said Your department is small, but you'd rather take a little slow, you know, a change of pace with guys that actually get it than being around the crazy calls of people that are just there.
Yeah. So my first department was four stations. And then I went to, like I said, one of the biggest departments in the country. And it was awesome, right? Like tons of fire, super busy, lots of experience, all that kinds of stuff, which there is something to be said about that, right? Like there's a lot of badass guys there. You get trial by fire, like it or not. You're going to run your calls. You're going to get your reps. You're going to do all that stuff. And just, I don't know if you know a little bit of the backstory of how I left or how I, all that kind of stuff. I didn't plan on leaving, right? Like I got to the big city and I was freaking doing it, right? And then that little COVID thing a few years ago, basically I was put in a position where I was asked to lie on some paperwork and I chose not to lie. I just want to be clear that I'm not bad mouthing the department. I have nothing against anybody there. I was just in a position where I had to hold myself accountable and hold myself to the standard that I hold others to. And I couldn't do that if I wasn't willing to put my money where my mouth was. So I'm not saying anything bad about people there. I'm not saying bad department, crappy, anything. Like, no, dude, it's full of awesome people. Just me personally, I didn't have to answer for anyone else there but me. And I couldn't, in good faith, lie on some paperwork and then go home and teach my kids to tell the truth. So basically I was showed up just like any other morning, put my gear on the rig, sat down for coffee time. The time came around, hey, do this or else. I said, no, hey, go get your gear off the rig and go home. So I got sent home, ended up not going back, and basically I didn't know what I was going to do, right? Because I landed my dream job at big department, all that kinds of stuff. But I'm sure you see all the stash salt stuff, all the mm-hmm. stuff behind me. That's my other business, which is a fire business, kind of. We make all the men's grooming stuff and give back to first responder families. Kind of started on accident as like a mad scientist experiment and has blown up into this awesome full-blown grooming company. So when I left, I was kind of in a position of like, all right, well, that's like my sweet side gig, right?
Right.
But now basically like, hey, it's sink or swim. I got to make this thing grow or else I'm going to starve, because I wasn't planning on leaving. Nobody leaves that department. It'd be crazy to leave, right? So fast forward, do stash salt full time for a few years. And in my head, I was like, man, if I'm ever in the position, because I can get back in the fire service, not because I have to, that's when I'll be interested again. Cause to be honest, like I was pissed. I was butthurt. I lost a lot of friends. I lost a lot of brothers. As soon as I wasn't wearing the same t-shirt anymore, I wasn't in the club. So having said all that, how is it being at a small department, all that kinds of stuff? As we were traveling around doing stash salt, we came through Utah a few times. I actually planned on moving to Colorado. I bought some land in the mountains. I was going to go disappear and say, F everybody, I'm done. But we traveled through here a few times, and some guys actually at my department now that were customers, hey man, come by and eat Thanksgiving dinner with us. Cool. And then, hey man, we just got a forcible entry door. Like, come force doors with us for the day. Cool, I'm in. And it just built that relationship from customers to.
During our conversation, we had a technical glitch in communication. Technology, right?
Are you
Am I
there?
back?
Yeah, got you. All
Yeah.
right. We had a little technical glitch. It's fine. It happens. So you were talking
Yeah.
about you built relationships from customers, and that's when it froze in.
Yeah. So, like I said, they invited me and the whole family, not just me, they invited my family to Thanksgiving dinner at the station. They got forcible entry doors, like, hey, come force doors with us, come hang out, come do some training. And basically they started trying to recruit me. Hey man, come work with us, come work with us. I know what happened. Cool. But like, we have a spot for you if you want it, basically. And to be honest, at first I told them no. I was like, look man, I'm done. I appreciate it. Like, I did my time. I miss it. I like force some doors and searching floors and hanging out with my buddies and doing all the fun stuff. But I was like, I'm all in on this business now. And like, to be honest, I was just over it. I think I was still kind of butthurt at the fire service in general. But they kept on me, and the chief ended up calling me, hey man, we want you to come work here. And I said, chief, like, thank you. I've been through three fire academies. Like, my certs don't transfer over from state to state. I'm like, basically, thanks, but no thanks. And he straight up told me, we hire people, not certs. We'll worry about that later.
Yeah.
So, and I was like, that's the best answer I've ever heard. Like,
Right.
that's what everyone wants to hear from a chief of, like, hey, if you're the right guy, you're the right guy. We'll worry about the rest of the stuff later.
Right.
So, like, when I heard that, I was like, dang, like, there's something special here. So, I ended up pushing it off for about a year. I was like, all right, maybe I'll just go part-time, because they supplement staffing with part-time guys that are all full-time somewhere else, like in this region. So I was like, man, I'll just pick up a shift or two a month and just kind of hang out with the boys and keep my skills and all that kinds of stuff. But they were like, hey man, we want you to come on. So I was like, all right. So I finally did. And it's been awesome. I know this is a super long roundabout way to get
No, you're
back to
good.
the small department thing. But back to like what I said about like why I got in the fire service, of truly being that hope, truly being there for people, truly stepping in, because it's our duty. I feel like that's what they did for me. They kind of like stepped into that gap of like, hey man, stuff's gone bad. Like, it's not the hand you thought you were dealt, whatever. And like I said, I had a lot of brothers bail out, disappear, disown me. And these people from across the country like showed up, wrapped their arm around me and be like, hey man, let's get back in the game. So, that means a lot to me, obviously. Like, if someone's willing to invest in you, that means more than, hey, we're willing to put your name on our t-shirt. So yeah, I've been here just a short time. I've did all my stuff to get my certs transferred over. I came in, it's kind of an interesting role, I would say, because I'm like the 10-year new guy, kinda. I'm coming in, you better believe I'm gonna fight for dishes. I'm gonna do every single new guy thing. You better believe, like, hey, if there's a mop, I'll break it in half before I let you have it. Like, we're gonna go hard on everything. Like, that's just how I came up of the, like, hey, you better fight for chores, like, even if it's stupid stuff, right? But that stuff means a lot. So you better believe I'm putting in all that effort. But at the same time, they're not treating me like a brand new guy off the street of like, hey, we have to hold your hand and make sure you know what to do. I was put in the tillerman spot almost instantly, which is, I think everyone agrees, that's the best spot here. So I'm usually tilling or riding tailboard on the engine. But I came in, and I know it's a weird thing to say because we don't like to toot our own horn or anything, but because of where I've worked, not to my credit, I was surrounded by a lot of great people that were able to invest in me very early. And now I have like an obligation and a duty to come here and teach these guys that it's not as busy, right? Like we don't get the reps. We don't have as many fires. We don't have as many whatever jobs. So like in my mind, I'm like, all right, well, I came here for a reason. These people want to invest in me, which means I'm going to invest back in the younger guys because it is a super young department. It's only been fully full time since like 08. So it's still new. It's in the growing phase. And what an opportunity to come along from an outside point of view and really pour into the people as well as learn things because things are different in Utah than they are in Texas, right? Like we didn't have basements where I was. Now every house here has a basement. So just tactically stuff, there's differences as well. But just coming in with the passion of like, hey, not because I'm cool, not because of anything I've done, like not been there, done that mentality, but like, hey, like I earned it and I want you guys to earn it too. And I want you guys to love it as much as I've loved it. So it's been super awesome. I have an awesome crew that anytime I'm like, hey, let's go throw ladders, everyone's in instantly. There's never anyone dragging feet. There's never like, hey, let's go pull lines. 100%, everyone's out the door instantly. So all that to say of big department versus small department. I think big department definitely has benefits. I definitely think for some people, it's just the right thing. They want to show up, run calls, and go home. They want to get reps. They want to fight a lot of fire. They want to be the salty dog, whatever. And I think there's 100% a place for that. And I'm super grateful for my time there. I got a lot of experience. I learned a lot of things, which I believe helped me get to the place I am now. But being back in a small department now that's super community oriented. Like at my first department, like I said, I was a small and then big, now back to small. I was one of like the fire prevention clowns. So we'd go to all the elementary schools and do the fire shows, the call 911, don't touch the hot stove, all that kinds of stuff. So being back in the small city, I really value that community part of it. 'Cause like I said, these are our customers. It is their emergency. What better way to be a neighbor than to know your neighbor and be there for them? So I think it's awesome. I think there'll be some people that are always like, hey, I'm not doing it unless it's in a big department. I'm not doing it unless I'm on a big downtown truck company, you know? And like, I've been there and it's freaking cool, right? But there's something to be said about the right people with the right mentality makes or breaks it. And I don't think that necessarily is defined by the size of the department.
Spot the fuck on, bro. I love it. No, I mean, I seriously, dude, like that's awesome because it just shows, how, like, for me, it shows your maturity. I love the way you talk about it. I love how you put it all together. And that's what I want other people to hear. Like, to me, it's all about what the individual wants. I don't want people, I hate whenever people take someone else's facade and try to make it theirs. Like, well, this is what I have to do. If I'm not big city, I'm not shit. And it's like, no, that's not the case. To me, it's about the department and about the people that you are surrounded with. Like, to me, those two things can make or break if a person stays or if a person checks out.
I've met plenty of people that go to 3 fires a day that suck at the rest of life, right? Like they're badass firemen. They'll boot any door and they'll go in any room and put it out. Like, cool. But the rest of their life is in shambles. But that one thing is cool, right? So it's what's important to you. And I'd rather be squared away all of life than just one area. So I don't know.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Love it. Okay. I'm gonna ask a it kind of goes hand in hand what you said. So with the department you're on now, how do you guys try to bring realistic training in? I'm not sure what your budget is for training, but what do you guys do to kind of give you the sets and reps?
So to be honest, like we don't have a training center. We don't have much. Like I said, just one station, small little area. Fortunately, our neighbors, American Fork, have a badass training center that we're able to use pretty much whenever we want. It's a four-story Connex setup with bedrooms and balconies, like the full deal, right? Like it's pretty awesome. But for the most part, we have a forcible entry door at the station. We have a balcony, and we have lots of trees and cars to pull lines between and work pinch points. I think you got to work with what you got, especially like running calls. Hey, everyone has apartment complexes, condos, carports, all that kind of crap. We pull lines in between those, and we stretch down apartment hallways and all that kinds of stuff that's actually in your first due, and make it realistic, right? Like, I don't know. We don't have the money, but we have the willingness, right? So we stretch through carports regularly. We throw to all of our condos. We have lots of three-story condos, which is a challenge if we're on the engine and we only have a 24-foot ladder. We're like, all right, well, what's our plan with that, right? So it's just a lot of what if and a lot of thinking and lots of getting people on the same game plan. But as far as training, like I said, it's a very young department, and we do run mostly medical calls, just like most places now, right? So we don't get, I mean, I say that I've been here, I think like 7 months, and I've had some freaking amazing calls since we've been here. Made a few grabs since we've been here. Like, not credit to me, credit to the crew, obviously. But like they say, we don't run that many calls. Like, dude, we've had some freaking awesome calls since I've been here. But I think it's just getting everybody on board, and everybody is to like. So my goal, at least me personally, I know I'm the backseat new guy, right? But my goal every shift is stretch, force, throw. So you pull a line every day, you force a door every day, and you throw a ladder every day. Like, I think we win the fight by mastering the basics. I think all these huge evolutions and stuff are cool, like all this multi-company high rise, like apartment buildings, schools on fire. Like, I think all that stuff is fun, and it's good to get reps and like get everybody thinking, get everybody on the same page. But we win the fight through the basics. So if you force a door a day, you stretch a line a day, and you throw a ladder a day, those are the basics. That's what's going to win the fight. So especially showing up as like a single company, like what we do in that first few minutes makes or breaks it. So getting everybody squared away on those stretch, force, throw, that's kind of our goal, at least on our crew, of like, hey, that's like the non-negotiable. That's what we're trying to do every day. We're each going to throw a ladder, we're each going to force a door, and we're each going to stretch a line. So, and the second person, like, we'll purposely, like, so we have a side by side at the station. We'll set the force door up, and I'll park the side by side like in front of the door. So now we gotta be chasing pinch points that whole time, right? Because I want the nozzleman to worry about being a nozzleman, and the second guy, he's working his ass off chasing pinch points. So I think it's just that it doesn't have to be big, it doesn't have to be expensive, it just has to be buy-in from the crew and understanding why. So I think everyone there understands why, so it's easy to do reps.
That's
So
awesome. No,
I think
I
there's
like it.
so yeah, like I said, like I don't want to go back and forth to where I was to where I am, but like I came from like our old training facility was like an old military surplus warehouse. It was like 50 million square feet or something like that. Like, it was blocks, blocks and blocks and blocks of command training and high rise and ropes and swift water and like a burn house and like all the trench, all the collapse, like all everything, all inclusive, like one badass training center. And I'm like, cool, like, hey, pull your truck over here in the parking lot, and we're gonna chase pinch points around your tires. So it's just but doing it and having the buy-in from everybody is what makes it awesome.
And that's to me that is the key thing. And I think that's where I feel like, I saw a post the other day of people talking about like firefighters jumping ship. They're not loyal. I don't think that's what it is. I think if they get to an organization or they get to a company or with a company that they just don't have that buy-in, man, that makes the shift, especially for a firefighter who's trying to be. Not like, and I'm not saying you have to be all in, but if you just want to be good at it, you gotta have guys around you, guys and girls that actually want to put in the work. Because when it's just you, after a while, man, it gets very tiresome, and I can see why people leave.
For sure. Definitely. But I don't want to say also, it's not always going to come instantly. Like, we're all of a sudden the crew's just like, hey, we're all in now. You're going to have to go out there and do it by yourself for a while. You're going to have to go out and just be throwing ladders, and everyone be like, hey, where did he go? And be like, oh, he's out throwing ladders again. All right, well, let's go check it out. And then you're out there, and then a conversation starts, right? Well, hey, what about that window? Hey, your turn. Go throw it. And slowly, as people start getting the more reps, then obviously, like, they get hungrier, right? And that's not my quote, obviously. But I think in the fire service, there's a lot of people that don't want to train because they don't want to show you how much they don't know, right? There's too many egos, too many people afraid to fail or look stupid or whatever. And it's like, man, I have no desire to look cool. I have no desire for you to pat me on the back and say that was rad. I want to just be efficient. So when my emergency comes in, we can go fix it. So, and I'm very fortunate to work with some people that are on the same page as that.
That's awesome. Okay. All right. So with your station only be or with your department being a single piece station, I'm assuming whenever a structural box comes out, you have mutual aid companies coming in. And normally how far that way people can kind of get a sense of what you guys have to deal with your first 5 or 6 minutes on scene.
Usually next in engine and ladder will be there like 3 or 4 minutes after us. So
Okay.
we're not isolated by any means. I mean, we're basically like we're in the middle of this county and the whole county plays together. So it's, I mean, it'd be easy to say like, hey, we're all the same department as far as like structure fire response. You're getting all the help you need. You're not out on the outskirts by yourself for 30 minutes before your next one shows up. So I mean, we're all gonna be there pretty quick.
Okay.
But there are some spots like we have at the base of the mountain here where we could be there 10, 15 minutes just by, from where their ladder's coming from or whatever it may be. Just there's no good way to get there. So I mean, there are spots obviously that you could have an extended no help, but for the most part, everybody's coming pretty quick.
Okay. All right. Next question, which it's kind of definitely hits with your situation, recruitment and retention. What do you see fire departments doing well with that, and what do you see things that we can improve on?
Man, I think it's way different than it used to be when we started, a decade ago, 14 years ago, whatever. When you tested somewhere, like, and you got on, it was like, dude, I'm a lifer, right? You signed up, you took 10 fire tests. The one that gave you the job is like, all right, I'm a ex-city employee for the rest of my career now. And I don't know if that's just like a cultural thing of people in general just chasing what's next, or like the we get bored easier now, or we just want whatever the next satisfaction is, or whatever. Or if an extra 5 grand, 10 grand a year really makes a difference to some people. I think a lot of that sounds cool, but when you break it down to your check, it's like $100 a month or something. This is like, is that really worth jumping ship and starting over? So for me, in my head, like I said, if someone's willing to truly invest in you and bring you in, that's worth staying loyal to. And I think that starts at the top, but it has to make its way to the bottom where the guys show appreciation for it. It can't just be a badass chief that's like, hey, like I want good guys, right? And then the guys at the bottom, even through the ranks, it's got to be the firemen that are like, hey, I recognize what chief is doing for us, and I'm going to show appreciation to that by working hard, by speaking well of this place that others want to come and be a part of it. And then all the way up of like, hey, man, this place is worth sticking it out. Everywhere's going to have ups and downs. Everywhere has problems. You're never going to find a perfect department that you show up every single day and everything is awesome. Like, It just doesn't exist because we're all people and we all screw stuff up. That's what we do. So I don't know if it's, like I said, if it's like a cultural thing of just chasing what's next. For me, I was kind of forced to find something different. I hadn't planned on that. I think my story was kind of, I don't want to say normal, but like I started somewhere small, went to the big city, and I was like, man, this is where I'm going to stay forever. But through my, I guess, forcing to move and ending up here, it's kind of given me that well-rounded point of view of, man, I think when you do find somewhere that's willing to invest in you, that's willing to be like, hey, this is a family, not just a co-workers, you know, that's what makes or breaks it. So
Definitely.
I think it takes all the people all the way up and down recognizing that, like, hey man, this place is what we make it. Like I just said, I came from one of the biggest training centers in the country to a parking lot, and I have dudes that are willing to go to the parking lot any second rather than, oh, we got to drive downtown. Like, it is what you make it, man. So
Yes. Okay. All right. All right. Next topic. Let's talk about leadership. And it definitely sounds like you have a great group of individuals that you work that you're fortunate that you surround yourself with. But in your opinion, what makes an effective leader? Like, what is leadership to you?
oh man, I could spout off all the books that I've read about it, or obviously there's some amazing leaders in the fire service, not just the fire service, military offices, whatever. But for me, so I'll give you an example. When I came to this department, right, I sat down, they're kind of looking at me. Like the chiefs knew who I was, but not everybody, not all the boots on the ground knew my whole story of how I got there, leaving, coming back. Not everybody knew that story, right? They're just like, who is this guy coming in with all this experience that, like, now he's going to be our new guy, but like, he's a lateral, but we're actually like putting him in this mentorship, like, role to teach the young guys. Like, they're like, who the heck is this guy, right? So I sat down with my captain first day. And he takes me into his office, like, all right, here's my expectations. Like, obviously, all the station stuff. Here's what we expect on calls. Here's how we run everything. Here's what we do. Like, here's what I expect of you as far as like station life, like learning, all that kinds of stuff. And then he asked me, he's like, well, what do you expect of me? And I thought that was an awesome question for him to ask. And my answer was simple. I said, if that's your standard, that whole paper you just gave me, if that's your standard, I expect you to hold me to it. So there's going to be days where it's easier just to turn the other eye, or like when it's easier, like, ah, it's late. We just got back from six calls after midnight. Like, I don't want to deal with that. It's like, no, dude, like, if that's the standard, I expect you to hold me to it. So I think a leader sets the standard, holds himself to the standard first, and then holds everyone else to it, like without exception. Obviously, there's stuff that happens, right? We can't be so rigid that we break each other. But I think setting the standard, living the standard, and then holding the standard. And from what I've seen, like, you add in all the different acronyms, you add in all the different key points and trigger words and all that hot topic stuff. It boils down to like, hey, if you set the standard, you live it, and you hold it, you're going to be successful.
Definitely. Nope, you're right. You're right. And it's funny too, because you have officers out there who will sit, their new individual down and be like, this is what I expect. And they hand them a sheet of paper. It might have bullet points and whatever. But then at the end of the day, they forget that they also have to do it. And they forget because they feel like, well, I'm at a certain rank where, this is what's expected of me. And it's just like it's got to be a two-way street. You know what I mean? Like you gotta hold yourself accountable for it, because if not, then the firemen are gonna see that, and then depending on whatever situation occurs or what doesn't occur, when they throw it back at you, their immediate response, if they're the type of officers I think that they are, you know what I mean? They'll get default aggressive and who are you to come at me? But it's just this is what you're holding me to. Why don't you have to do it yourself?
Yeah, 100%. I think they should hold themselves to it plus some,
Right.
right? Because they are in that next role. They are in that step up of like, hey, when stuff does go bad, people are turning to you, right? So not even like just that same bare minimum, but like, hey, I got three extra bullet points on mine, so don't you worry.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. All right. Let's kind of go into the physical fitness aspect of the fire service. How important is that, in your opinion?
Yeah, 100%. Super important. I know there's all the different workout guys and all, there's tons of fitness programs and all that stuff, and I think it's freaking awesome that it's making such a huge push right now, because I think there are a lot of guys that are like, hey man, I'm here, like I've put in my new guy years, that stuff's not my responsibility anymore, like I'm just the senior man now, like now I can kick back and watch movies. I think there's a push of this new era of firemen that are ready to not settle for being mediocre. So I think it's freaking awesome. I think it's badass that there's a huge push again for it right now, and I hope it stays, because like I said, when that bell goes off, it is your emergency, and if you can't go fix it, then you shouldn't be here. Like that's not a guy girl thing. That's not a chief firefighter thing. That's not a whoever. It's a, hey, if it goes off and you're not able to go fix it, like you need to find something else to do. Whether it's pulling someone out of a basement, whether it's a person that fell in the bathtub, right? Like whatever it is, you have to be able to fix it. Like that's what the fire service is, right? Is we're problem solvers.
Definitely.
I love the way, I don't remember who said it, but all firefighting is, oh, I think it was Chief Thompson. He said, we're aggressive problem solvers. That's what we do. That's why we're here, is nobody called us because something good happened. They never said, look at this smart thing I did. Right? It's always something went wrong and I need someone else to fix it. Like, I don't know what else to do. Come fix it. And most of the time that involves a lot of heavy stuff and we got to be able to do it, right? So I think it's super important. Yeah, I hope the trend of people being pumped about it stays. I think we have a lot of good guys pushing that direction.
No, definitely, definitely. So, and the thing too with what you mentioned, your what you try to do every shift, your force. I forgot what the acronym you use for the hose
You
pull.
stretch, force,
Stretch,
throw.
yeah,
Yep.
stretch, force,
Stretch, force,
throw.
throw.
Those three things alone, right there. Like if you start off where, all right, I'm gonna go gloves and helmet, and then
Yeah.
as you continually, gradually step up, it's like, all right, I'm gonna put on bunker pants, gloves, helmet, and then all of a
Yeah.
sudden, you're in full gear. That right there, that is movement. That is exercise as
Absolutely.
well. Like, you know what I mean? Like your body gets used to the heat and the weight. And if you can do that and do it well, I also think that helps your health. Now, you still have to watch what you kind of eat, but I still think
Yeah.
that that definitely helps you towards the physical fitness portion of the fire service.
Yeah, absolutely. You gotta train like you play, or play like you train, whatever I'm trying to say. You gotta prepare yourself, right? You can't never put your gear on and then be like, oh, if we got your fire, I'll be good. Like, well, yeah, the last time you put your gear on was a training 3 months ago, and now it's the middle of summer, it's 105 outside, and like that's not the same, dude. You gotta stay consistent the whole time. So yeah, I think it's super important.
With that being said, was it easier or was it hard, easy or hard for you to get acclimated from Texas to Utah weather? Because I know Utah has winters, but they also
Yeah.
have pretty brutal summers too, correct?
Yeah. So Texas, I would say, has two seasons, hot and cold. You get a few weeks of nice on either end of that. So the summers were absolutely brutal. Obviously, working fires in the summer. Obviously, everyone wants to fight fire, but it's miserable, right? And then run wrecks on the interstate for a couple hours at night, and it's just 100 degrees still. Like, that sucks. Coming here, It's definitely winter. Like, we definitely have a lot of snow, which is a new thing for me to work with. Like, even just catching a plug, right? Like, now all of a sudden you got to dig your hydrant out before you even grab it. So that adds in time. Just road conditions, right? Stuff like that. Driving on hills, where you park, positioning the ladder, like all that kinds of stuff that I didn't have to worry about ice on the road. I didn't have to worry about snow. So all that kinds of stuff. But then, yeah, just like the physically just walking around and being in the cold versus the heat. 'Cause yeah, the heat, I mean, it gets super hot here too. The difference is here you get a break at night, which is nice. So even if it's hot all day, it'll drop down 60, 70 at night. So, I mean, it's awesome outside. Texas is like, hey, it's 105 during the day and 99 at night. So like you just didn't get a break. But it's been cool. I mean, I like it because you actually get four seasons here, which is nice. So you get a ton of beautiful time, and then you get the brutal winter and the brutal summer. And I don't know. I think it's more fun to actually get the full four seasons, which is cool.
All right. I just had to ask that because I know
Yeah.
it's got to be two different perspectives. So I just wanted to hear it.
Yeah.
Next topic, which I'm very interested to hear from you, your opinion on wellness and truly being there for one another. Because you mentioned the term brotherhood gets thrown around. Hey, brother, sister, whatever. You're my family. I'm your family. Like,
Yeah.
so in your opinion, what does that mean to you?
So for me personally, it was something that was super special, like right from the get-go. I think I even said this to a guy, like when I first started, like all those years ago, and we're talking, and like he finally called me brother one day. And like I was a new guy, gung ho, like everything was my job. I was like all in, right? And then like I specifically remember like he called me brother one day, and it was like I did it. Like I'm in the crew now. Like I was part of it, right? So for me personally, it's something that's super special and something that it's super disheartening to see get tossed around so much and to see people not actually live it out. Like I said, with my experience, I had a ton of brothers because I worked for a huge department and I had a bunch of friends and I have stash salt. So it's kind of like a big, well-known thing everywhere I go and working for the department. Hey, brother, 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 brother. And then, like, the second I wasn't in the club anymore, most of those brothers, like, I'm not joking, you disowned me, like, didn't talk to me. Didn't want anything to do with me. Like, hey, you're not in the freaking club with us anymore. But having said that, with social media, with the reach that we have now across the world, I had so many people that I wouldn't have expected, like, step up and be in my corner instantly. So I know you've had James Cook on here. Him and I talk regularly. A phrase that he has is fair weather brotherhood. Hey, as long as everything's cool and hunky dory, then we're all good and on the same page. But as soon as there's some rough seas and anything goes sideways, like I'm out. And that is absolute garbage because the whole idea is if you're not with me when stuff goes bad, then I don't even want you there when stuff is good. You know, like the whole idea is. We had talked about that, and we see that saying all the time in the fire service from the Bible, right? Iron sharpens iron, which is a cool saying, and it sounds real tough and all that kinds of stuff. But like, if you actually think about what that means, iron sharpening iron is a painful process, right? Like the metal has to be heated up, it has to be beat, it has to be scraped, it has to have material removed in order to come out stronger and sharper on the other end, right? And if we can't have guys that are willing to get in the fire with us when stuff goes bad, then like you don't deserve to be there when I'm a nice shiny new sword, right? Like you got to be able to get in the fire with someone, even if it's uncomfortable, even if it's miserable. It's like, hey, we'll do anything for anyone except each other.
For real. No,
Right? Like,
you're right.
we'll go to hell right now as soon as that tone drops for anybody that we've never met before. But the second one of our brothers is having a hard time, we're like, ah, out of sight, out of mind. Like, that's their problem. He did it to himself, right? Like, no, dude, we're all human. We all screw up. We all have hard times. We all have unexpected things. And it's not true brotherhood in my head unless you're willing to put your arm around someone and walk through whatever it is with them. So, yeah. So,
No,
having
dude.
said like that's a super important thing to me, of that specifically, of like I said, I learned it very early on, like that it was an earned thing. It was special and it needs to be protected. So, I hate when people just toss it around as just like a, hey man, and like I've done Stash Salt videos about it, like making fun of us, making fun of all of us, right? Like I did one of going to FDIC and yelling across the hallway, "Hey brother!" And like 50 dudes, "Oh, you know." So there is like a lighthearted, and like I want to keep everything fun, and like there needs to be that level of stuff, but there's difference between like, I guess not everyone is a brother, right? Some
Oh,
dudes are
right.
just extra dudes, but like if you're calling someone a brother, you better freaking be a brother when it needs it.
Definitely. No, you're definitely right. And I'm not sure if it's a, I don't want to say a generational thing, because that's not what I'm implying. And I'm not, so I'm saying it's not generational. I don't know if it's more of our day and age now, where if you see a standard, I'm just going to use this as an example. If you see a standard that's not being met, and you call out a certain group about, hey, like, we're telling people, we're teaching people, we're talking about, like, this is what we do, you're not doing it. It's like the minute you call them out on it, it's like, oh, threat, you're a target. And the other day, actually yesterday, I've been catching up with Corley's episode. He had Chief Ike on there, which I love Chief Ike. Not a lot of people like Chief Ike, because I think he's very vocal and he's blunt. And I think that's what, in this day and age, is what you need, because people come into this profession thinking, what can this profession do for me? And it's more like, no, it's what you can do for it. So he had a, I'm pretty sure it was a Taylor's tin shield, and it had it was like a target with an arrow on there. And he's like, this is what I have created. He's like, the way I talk, I put a target on my back. And I feel like firefighters out there who are trying to preach the message why we're truly here to those who don't understand it, you instantly become, for some reason, a threat to the person. And like, you're looked at as, okay, an outsider, a potential problem. We need to fix this. And I can say, like, I'm pretty sure there's a group of individuals like that in every organization, because, like you said, no organization's perfect. But I feel like if you can get backing from the top down on it, and especially company officers to buy in on it, like, the fire service in whole in general would be a lot better. If it's just like, it can't just come from the boots on the, it can't just come from the back step, because we can only do so much. You know what I mean? Like, we need the officers, the chief officers, to push it more and more.
100%. With that, I think it goes back to setting the standard early, because if you set the standard, they know what they can or should be achieving or operating at. If you don't set it early and they kind of just float around and then you get pissed at someone later for not being at something, then it's like, well, shoot, man, how did I know that's what the level I was supposed to be at if you didn't tell me? So I think it's setting the standard early. And then if someone is failing to meet it, you can go to them, hey man, like this is not me bashing you. This is me, how can I help you? How can I help you accomplish that? Like, because I'm good at throwing ladders and you haven't thrown as many, like that's not me saying, look at how good I am. It's saying, how can I help you get better? Right? Like that shouldn't be threatening. I understand for a lot of people it is, but
For some,
I
and
think
but
it.
I think it goes back to, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but I think it goes back
Oh
to,
yeah.
like you said, they don't want to look bad. Well, if you don't want to look bad, go do something that you're not good at.
Yeah, go get better.
Simple.
I 100% agree. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's an interesting thing, but I think, like I said, I think setting standards and and not necessarily like a chief level SOP standard for everything, right? But just like a crew to crew, man to man, guy to girl, like whatever standard, like this is how we operate. This is what I expect when we get off the rig. This is what our citizens deserve, right? This is how they expect us to operate. They don't care if they call 911 in downtown New York or in Timbuktu, whatever. Like, they expect the freaking superstars to show up every single time. They don't care what your patch is. So you better be freaking dialed and give them the service they deserve.
And I think a lot of people, honestly, I think a lot of people forget that. I think a lot of them become so complacent. They get into the mindset of, oh, that can't happen here. Oh, hey, man, like, with social media, you can see breaking multiple alarm fires going on all over the country, and you'll watch a video and it's like, man, like these dudes are there working hard. It's like, oh, that'll never happen here. You know where we live at? You know what I mean? Like, they get into that false sense of security until, and that's the thing. Like, I always try to get people to harp and understand, bro, if that happens 5 minutes from now, what are you gonna do? Like, are you going to be ready? And then when the situation goes bad, whatever the outcome is, the excuses of, well, they were already whatever before we got there, or there was nothing we could have done, when there was plenty of things you could have done to save time or train and hone on your skills on. But nobody wants to talk about that, because if you bring it up, it's like, yo, you're a threat, and I don't like that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's the old saying, Ben Franklin, like 1775 or whatever, with the first fire company, right? An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So, same thing. Whatever you're preparing for, that's worth way more when you get to the outcome phase. Like, all right. Drivers, knowing your district, knowing where the road construction is, saving 30 seconds on the way there, right? Getting out the door 30 seconds faster. Now all of a sudden you're there a minute faster, right? Masking up in 10 seconds instead of a minute and a half on the porch, setting your helmet down, looking around. Like, now are a couple minutes of bought back time that is useful. When you say, oh, they were already like that. Well, were they like that a minute and a half ago? Right? Like.
No, you're right, man. I love it. I love all the key points, because you see it. Like, I see it all the time. I see people that struggle and fumble, and then when you ask them about it, or it's like their default is, well, I had issues with this thing right here. And it's like, I get it. But the only way to not have the issues is just to continually do the reps and reps. And I love whenever, like, individuals will talk about, let's just say, like, their kids or whatever or something are in sports, and it's like, yeah, I got on my son or my daughter for, in order to be good like you want to be, you got to practice, practice, practice. Yeah, you're telling your child and stuff that you need to practice, 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 but in order to be good at what we do, you also have to practice. You know what I mean? Like, if you're telling your kid one thing, are you realizing that you're telling them they have to get better by keep going repetitive motions? But what are you doing? And then when you get mad or it doesn't work out, you're like, well, this thing was already messed up or whatever. Like, I love the excuses. It's like, just be an adult, understand you can't, if you want to get good at something, you just got to do it. And then if somebody has a better way, let them show it to you. They're not like going, hey, I can, like, let me do this maneuver. Oh, you're just doing that because you're just trying to show off. No, it's because this person has perfected and worked on a technique. So, I mean, I don't want to beat that subject down too much, but it really just drives me crazy when you got individuals out there who perceive you as a threat. When it's like, this person took the time to learn to perfect the craft like we all should. Why don't you?
Or on, sorry to like continue on that, but like on the other end, we are all human, right? And at the end of the day, even the most dialed person is gonna we're gonna screw stuff up. So like when that person that is the threat, or that is like, oh, they're the superstar or the poster boy or whatever, like when they do screw up, because it will happen, right? Like we all screw up. I screw up. I mess stuff up. I've dropped ladders before. I've stretched to the wrong place. Like we've all made mistakes, right? But it's, I freaking messed up. Just own it. And then the other people not coming in and be like, see, I told you, blah, blah, blah. It goes back to the brotherhood thing of like being there for each other, of like, Hey man, we all freaking screw up. Who cares? Like, that's why we train, to limit that and to hopefully eliminate it from the equation of whatever the bad thing is. But like, we can't just destroy each other every time someone screws up, because we're all gonna do it. We've all done it. We're all gonna do it again. So like, when someone screws up, hey man, like, that sucks. Hey, let's go get better together.
Definitely, definitely, man, definitely. And so I'm going to switch gears on a lighter note as you kind of wind down. I personally want to know, how did Stash Salt, like, how did that whole thing come about? Because I love hearing firefighters that have, side businesses that kind of still contribute and give back to the fire service.
So it all started kind of on accident, as like a mad scientist experiment, to be honest. I was actually at some training with a buddy of mine, and someone pulled out a tin of some other mustache wax, whatever. And my buddy was like, "Hey man, you should just see if you could make your own." So, okay, cool. So we did a little mad scientist research and came up with a few different like recipes, basically, and put them. Did them. I was like, "Hey, these are pretty good." So I put it like on my own social media of like, "Hey, look what I did." And instantly people are like, "How do I buy it?" So I was like, "Oh crap." I wasn't trying to start a business or do anything like that. So
Right.
I told my wife, I said, "Babe, I need a logo. So it's got to have a skull, a mustache, and a fire lid." So you can see, like, we put the logo. It's everywhere now. But like I said, I wasn't trying to start a business. I never sat down with like this grand plan of, here's my goal, or here's what I'm going to do, here's what I'm going to grow. But my old chief, where I used to work, got diagnosed with cancer, and his family was really struggling with the bills. That was still when I was in small department stuff. So like, it kind of hit our little community pretty tough. And I was like, man, I wasn't trying to start this. I'm making some sales. Like, the goal of this was never to put money in my pocket. So let's use this to give back to his family. So we sold for a bunch of months, right? Like, we're still just a new small company. So we sold for a bunch of months, and I got with the other chief. I was like, "Hey chief, are you okay if we come to the Christmas banquet and just present chief with a check? Just 'cause." And he was on board. So we did. We went to the Christmas banquet. "Hey chief, for no other reason other than we can and we love you, here you go." And here we are, 7 years later, still doing the same thing. We still put aside from all the sales and donate to first responder families. It's kind of evolved from just the firefighter. We've done benefits like for sisters, for wives. We've done kids of first responders that got diagnosed with cancers. Obviously, kids don't need mustache wax, right? So what we've done is, I'll call up the family and say, "Hey, what's their favorite flavor of ice cream?" "Strawberry." "All right, so I'll make a strawberry chapstick, and we'll sell that for a few months to raise money to benefit that family." So it's kind of evolved into this, like, more than just the firefighter himself or herself, but to, and like, hey, we're just here for families. So that's still what we do. I've been super fortunate to travel all around the country, meet all these, not all the families, but meet a lot of the families, visit tons of departments. I've been very, very fortunate to be involved. Like, there's the fire service, right? And then there's a smaller fire community, and then even smaller, there's like the fire-owned businesses, right? And there's different levels of that. Like, there's like the corporate people, like Pierce, MSA, right? And then there's like the next group of like bigger businesses. And then there's like the small fire-owned community, like you mentioned, Taylor's Tins, Next Rung, like Leatherhead Concepts, all these guys that I'm fortunate enough to be friends with. Which is super awesome, back to the brotherhood thing of like, these people are truly here because they're not just trying to sell a product and make a quick buck. Like, they're actually trying to pour back into the fire service. So Stash Salt, a mad scientist experiment gone well, I guess. I've shipped to all 50 states. I ship it all over the world every week. We go Germany, Bavaria, France, I go to South America all the time. We ship to Canada all the time, which is cool. Yeah, it's just been a super cool thing, which has given me a unique perspective in the fire service and like a unique reach. I get to go to lots of cool trainings because of it, whether we're donating raffle prizes or if I'm actually going and helping with training or whatever. So it's been super cool. A super awesome accident that turned out to be something awesome that is way bigger than me. Yeah, I'm the face of it. I still make all the wax.
I was going to
I
ask, do you make
yeah.
it yourself?
So
Okay.
I make everything. If you looked over there, I've got racks and racks of mustache wax, hair pomade, shaving stuff. Like I still hand make everything. My wife does all the logos. So all the shirts, all the stickers, all the tin designs. She does all that stuff. So we're kind of like the perfect little team of she does her part, I do my part. We meet in the middle and make something awesome happen. So she comes to all the events with me. She comes to all the trainings. My kids are involved with it. Yeah, it's just been a super cool thing of getting to do something bigger than us, right? Like it started out like I'm just gonna make a few tins and see what happens. And now it's turned into, hey, we get to help people all over. I get to sell a lot of stuff, which is cool. I get to be friends with a lot of people that are way cooler than me. And stuff like this, conversations that wouldn't normally get to have. So I'm super grateful for it. It's been an awesome ride so far. So I'm excited to see where else it goes.
That's great, man. That's great. And for those that want to, like, I call it like the shameless plug, but like, how would they find your product?
StashSalt.com. Super easy, super straightforward. We're on all the social medias, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, all that stuff. Yeah, I probably see my face more often than you guys want to. But it's on there. I'm the mustache guy, so I'm locked in now. Even if I wanted to shave, I'm pretty locked in.
You're
So
like, yeah, I can't do
yeah,
that.
I'm a
Okay.
lifer now.
I got you. I got you. 'Cause it's like you're looking at me and you're like, oh, this baby face, man. I tried it and I swear, dude, I felt like I looked like a pedophile or something. I was like, ah, I don't like a mustache.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's not for everybody. Everybody's face is different, but you definitely
Yeah.
have a unique stash for sure, man.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that.
No, that's awesome. And I love how it a little something you tried turned into. It's like, you know, everything happens for a reason. A door opens, which leads to this door, which leads to a bigger door, which leads to a greater cause. So I love it. I love reaching out to people that have like unique side businesses. And the point of the matter is like they're not out there just trying to make a buck. They're actually trying to do something. Because unfortunately, we have people out there like they're like, no, I just want to make some money and I don't really care about anything else. Whereas you
Yeah.
have companies out there that are actually doing something. And that's the thing too. Like people will see kind of like one side, like, oh, he may say he's about this, but it's all about, you know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
everyone's got an opinion now. That's the thing. Everyone's got an opinion. And it's like, why are we like this to each other?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I don't know which page it was the other day, but they put out that post that says, yeah, nobody hates firemen except other firemen. And
That's
we're our own
facts.
Worst enemy. Rather
Absolutely.
than being there until proven otherwise, like we show up and we're skeptical until someone proves their worth, rather than giving them the benefit of the doubt, and then we're quick to rake them over the coals, and it kills me, man. We got to be there for each other.
Definitely, definitely. Man, Griffin, man, I truly appreciate you reading the DM I sent you. Probably like, is this guy legit? Because like I found myself doing that and I'll be like, oh, but this is not spam. I am a legit person. This is a legit request. But man, you graciously read it and we communicated back and forth. And I truly appreciate you taking your time to do this, man. Really do.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you having me on here. Keep up the great work. I know you have some heavy hitters on here, and I'm excited to see you keep going, man. So thanks for letting me be a part of it.
Yeah, man, I truly appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.